Hello, Steve here. Before we start this episode, I just want to pop up and say that our next live stream show of An Evening of Unnecessary Detail is on Sunday, the 28th of April, from the world famous Royal Institution in London. You can log in from anywhere in the world to join our nerdy community in the online chat room during the show and watch the show again on demand for 14 days afterwards. The best bit is the live stream tickets are all pay what you can, and you can get them now from festivalofthespokennerd.com/tickets.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hi, I'm Helen Arnie.
I'm Steve Mould.
I'm Matt Parker. And you're a person listening to a podcast where we go into an unnecessary level of detail. Well, some people think it's unnecessary, not us. We think it's the appropriate amount of detail.
Today's episode is on the ones and twos. Disappointingly, I won't be spinning some of my favourite UK garage tracks over the next 45 minutes, but I will be talking about left-handed molecules and right-handed molecules. You know, for balance.
I will also not be rotating some of Steve's favourite garage tracks. I will be talking about the hardest working digits in mathematics. My fingers. No, I'll be talking about what we technically call small numbers.
And I will be sharing not one, but two of my songs.
First up, on the ones and twos, MC Matt Parker, Four to the Floor Flavours, UK.
Matt, I'm guessing you have ones and twos.
I do. And most people would think there's only one one and only one two. But I've taken the title to heart. I've got many ones and many twos. Because they're small numbers in maths, one and two pop up all the time. You constantly see ones, you constantly see twos, and it's not significant. So for example, two is the only number that is both prime and is even, which doesn't sound groundbreaking, but it just turns out because two's small, it's in the collection of numbers that are primes, and it's in the collection of numbers that are even. That's the only one in both. And one is the only non-prime with fewer than three factors.
Wait, what? Hang on. What? I don't want to open a can of worms here, but
please do.
Is one prime? Isn't it?
One is not prime. Open bracket, depending on who you ask. Close bracket.
Okay, I'll ask someone else then. Easy.
Well, I mean, I don't want to get ahead of myself, but I have the controversial opinion that five is the first prime, and people get very upset about that. Exactly. And it's for the very reason that I'm talking about now, which is the strong law of small numbers.
It's not just a law of numbers. It's a strong law.
It's a strong law.
I thought in mathematics, things were either true or not. It's like, nah, no, this is
super
strongly true.
Extra, extra, extra true.
Have they been listening to particle physicists and gone, right, you got a strong force, a weak force.
A weak force.
We want to get in on that. That sounds interesting.
This law has spin up. So the guy who came up with this, actually, I've met the guy who came up with this, and I can say Guy. I'm not using that as like a gendered term. His name is Guy. Richard Guy. Literally, the guy who came up with this, Richard Guy, who passed away quite recently, but he was doing mathematics for a very long time. I introduced him when he was giving a talk, and he was 99 years old at the time. Still got up, fired up his PowerPoint, clicking through some maths he'd come up with recently.
Wow.
That is amazing. A 99-year-old on the ones and twos. Yep.
On the ones and twos. He was up and around. He was more movement on stage than some other much younger speakers at that conference. So Richard Guy, in the very late 1980s, when he was, you know, a young mathematician in his late 60s, came up with the strong law. And I'll be honest, the strong, because he's a funny guy. I'm going to keep saying guy, and I'm going to chuckle every time. I'm going to stop pointing it out from here in. So Richard Guy, he's got a sense of humor. I don't know. This is my speculation. I think he's making fun partly of like scientists who have strengths of laws and laws get superseded. But there is a thing called the law of small numbers. In fact, there's a law of big numbers. There's also a strong law of big numbers, but it's all in statistics. So he's more making fun of the fact that in statistics, and you can add the strong law is like the same statement, but more restrictive or more precise.
Strong means like narrowing the definition.
Yeah.
Strongly it's large more powerful. Numbers. It's a law about yeah. strongly large numbers.
No, it's strongly a law. It's numbers. A strongly a law about numbers of any strength.
Okay.
The strong law of small numbers is there aren't enough small numbers to meet the many demands made of them.
What?
Wow.
Which is to say, we have a lot of properties, we have a lot of rules, a lot of relationships, a lot of patterns in mathematics, and the vast majority of them start at the beginning of the numbers and then work their way up. And because there are so many things in maths that all start with small numbers, we're asking small numbers to do a lot. And there's not that many of them. And once you get to big numbers, they're spaced out. The primes never again overlap with the even numbers. The non-primes never overlap with the fewer than three factors crowd, right? Plenty of room. But when it comes to the small numbers, there's just not enough of them to go around. And so you get a lot of overlap.
They're like the hospital administrators of the number world. People yeah. just expect them to be able to do everything that's handed to them, no matter how challenging it is, because yeah. everyone else has got a tough job as well, right? I get it, but someone's got to do all of the stuff to support everyone else, and if they don't do it, the whole thing falls apart. They're being asked too much.
It's like if you noticed that there was three of something in mathematics, you couldn't call it the Parker constant, because three is used for so many things. You couldn't sort of
bad example, great point. Yeah.
Oh, thanks.
And there is something called, I think it's the Lagrange constant, which is, it was named before it was calculated, and it turns out it's one. So,
no.
Yeah. Yeah, they named it going, there's some constant, it's got these properties. It turns out it was the number one the whole time.
Oh, that's...
I'm never saying one again. I'm always saying the Lagrange constant from now on.
Exactly. I think it's Lagrange.
How many sugars in your tea? Lagrange constant.
Just the Lagrange constant, yeah.
Do we have to rename this episode now? On the Lagrange constant and
twos.
The twos, and, yeah.
Well, there are probably some hipster people who have renamed twice the Lagrange constant or some rubbish. Who knows?
So it's on the Lagrange constant yeah. and twice the Lagrange constant. That's appalling.
And this is also why I think prime should start at 5, because the numbers below that are just, they're only prime because there were small numbers that were in the way.
Right.
It's like all prime numbers are one more or one less than a multiple of 4 other than 2. Come on, 2. Get with it.
Seems like a more complicated definition.
Yeah.
All primes. Why stop at 5? Why 5 though? Why not 7?
I use 5 partly because there are loads of things like, you know, all primes are one more or one less than a multiple of 6 other than 2 and 3.
Ah, okay.
All prime numbers squared are one more than a multiple of 24 apart from 2 and 3. So the reason I don't really like 2 and 3, there are no composite numbers smaller than them. And so they aren't enough numbers yet to have factors. That's why they're prime. There's not enough numbers yet. Whereas 5 is the first prime bigger than a composite.
Yeah.
It's bigger than 4. And so I'm like, okay, 5 conceivably could have factors, but it doesn't. you know, it's deliberately prime, whereas 2 and 3 are only prime because they're too small to have factors. So that's that's my...
I see what you mean.
I call 1, 2, and 3, or maybe just 2 and 3, I call them the subprimes.
But, like, sub can be a positive thing. Like, a subwoofer is definitely...
That's true.
Better than a woofer.
Oh, it can be grey. It's just different. I'm fine.
Yeah. They got that whole own properties that are more useful in other ways.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I'm not saying we do away with the ones and twos.
Oh, because we really have to rename this episode.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Now, this does lead me to the second strong law of small numbers.
Oh, wow. Okay.
There's the first, again, ones and twos. There's the first strong law of small numbers, retrospectively given its title of first, when some guy came up with the second strong law of small numbers, which is, when two numbers look equal, it ain't necessarily so. And so this is the kind of the follow-on. So this is almost the consequence of the first strong law of small numbers. And that's when you see two things give the same numbers, it doesn't mean they're really the same numbers. It just means they happen to be the same because they're small, not because of anything, you know, mathematical going on behind the scenes. So, for example, if you want to stack barrels, like, I don't know, whiskey barrels or something, and you know you can, like, if you've got two barrels next to each other, you could stack a third one on top. So if you keep track of how many ways you can arrange barrels as you're stacking them, if you got one barrel, it's just, there's only one way. You've got to put it down on the side, that's it. If you've got two barrels, there's only one way. You put them next to each other, that's it. Mm-hmm. If you've got three barrels, suddenly you've got a choice. Third barrel could go on top, or it could go next to them. So there are two ways to arrange three barrels. If you've got four barrels, you could have all four on the ground. You could have three of them on the ground and one up on the top on the left, or one up on the top on the right. And so there are three ways. And if you've got five barrels, then there are five ways. And if you've got six barrels, there are eight ways. It's the Fibonacci numbers.
What?
Fibonacci?
Each time you add another barrel, the number of ways you can arrange them goes 1, 1, 2, 3, 5, 8.
Nice.
And then 12.
Oh.
Which is not a Fibonacci number.
That's not right.
No. And then 18, which is horribly wrong.
That's not.
It only matches for the first six cases. But it's so convincing for those six. You're like, man, that's really convincing. And
that is cosmic. That is karmic.
It's a coinkydink. Yeah. And it's a really alluring because it feels like it's a Fibonacci kind of situation. So for people who've done lots of math puzzles and these things, it feels so Fibonacci. You're arranging things. Other ones are more obvious, like the powers of 1.5, if you round them down to the nearest whole number, give you all the primes.
No.
No.
1.5 to the power of 1, round it down, gives you 1. To the power of 2, gives you 2. Power of 3 is 3. Power of 4 is 5. Power of 5 gives you 7. Power of 6 gives you 11.
Sign me up to this cult now.
And then it stops working. That's not working. But you are suspicious immediately. You're like, there is no way the powers of 1.5 are going to give you all the prime numbers. That's ridiculous.
I bet if you carry on for long enough, it will give you another prime number. And then you'll be like, ooh.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly. Just when you looked away. And there are other crazy ones. Like if you have the number E, to the power of N minus 1 on 2, and you round it up to the nearest whole number, and you start working your way through the values of N, that gives you Fibonacci, but it goes all the way up. 1, 1, 2, 3, 5, 8, 13, 21, 34, 55. Then it breaks.
Wow.
So, and again, grinky dink.
But by then it's been burnt as a witch, so it's too late.
Exactly. Yeah. So the strong law of small numbers is partly fun in maths, just to say, hey, bear in mind, like, it's a weird quirk of small numbers. They pop up all the time because there aren't many small numbers, so they've got to do a lot of jobs each. They've a lot of job sharing with the small numbers because it's a very small workforce.
Yeah.
It's worth bearing in mind that you can't trust small numbers in general. Like, you know, 10% of the first 100 numbers are perfect squares, but that doesn't carry on. You know, a quarter of the numbers below 100 are prime, but that doesn't carry on, right? It's just because we're only looking at the small numbers. And then the second law is reminding you, if you see patterns, you can't just assume they're going to keep happening. And in that regard, small numbers doesn't just refer to like the ones and twos. Pretty much anything can be a small number if you try hard enough, because there are so many patterns in maths that look like they work for absolutely ages. So before I said, I'll talk about prime. All prime numbers are one more or one less than a multiple of four. It looks like more primes are one less than a multiple of four than one greater than a multiple of four. And that's true up until 26,861. And that's when it flips to be the other way around. And there are other things in maths which are true. Like, I mean, again, this is, I mean, I haven't got a practical example like stacking barrels or something here. But if you compare n to the power of 17 plus 9 to n plus 1 to the power of 17 plus 9, they are relatively prime always. Except once you get up into the sextillions, 52-digit numbers. The first time that fails is a number that starts 84244 and that has 52 digits. And that's the first insane counter example. Every other example up until then works.
So the rule of small numbers is a rule that can take you up to 52 digits or more. We just haven't found something yet.
Exactly. Who knows?
Is that the best example? Is it or the worst example of a rule that keeps working for a very long time and then breaks?
I reckon you could prove that you could construct such a rule for arbitrarily large numbers. That is the biggest common example I see passed around, but I have seen people give a talk. I think a mathematician called David Acheson, that we both know, has a bigger example in one of his talks. David Acheson, if people want to look it up. But never trust examples is the short way to put this in maths, because examples are misleading. You need proof.
It reminds me of the tau versus pi debate. It's well known that I'm an advocate of using tau instead of pi for the circle constant because it simplifies mathematics. Tau is just 2 times pi. It comes from the ratio of the radius of a circle to its circumference, whereas pi comes from the ratio of the diameter to the circumference. Anyway, one argument for tau that I've given in the past is like if you look at simple equations that involve pi and tau, one argument that people give for pi is so like look at this beautiful equation, the area of a circle is pi r squared. But
great equation.
Whereas if it was tau, it would have to be a half tau r squared. And my rebuttal of that is that actually the equation, a half tau r squared, has this meaning to it. The half means something. It tells you something about the equation. It tells you that it comes from an integration. Like, you know, when you integrate something, you raise the power and then you divide by the new power. So the r squared, and you have the two at the bottom of the half, that comes from the fact that to calculate the area of a circle, you've done an integration over r. Like kinetic energy is half mv squared, for example. The v squared and the half comes from the fact that you had to do an integration to get there. Whereas if you use pi in your equations, then it masks that. It masks that structure that you can see where it came from. Though from everything you said, Matt, you know, the strong rule of small numbers, maybe that two or that half was doing something else and you actually can't use it in that way. I hate to say it, but it kind of ruins my argument about the power of tau in that particular scenario.
Steve, if you've ever considered a career in law, I'm so glad you didn't go into it. I just imagine you in court just going, so I would like to defend this person who I shall now show is completely guilty.
Yeah, you don't want me on the defense.
If we rename this episode, there are a lot of options. So we can call it On the Ones and Tows.
Yes,
that's my preference. Steve's preferred option. Or Matt, I think your preferred option would probably be On the One with 52 zeros after it to the Twos with 52 zeros after it. Just to clarify how big small numbers really can be.
That's the level of precision I like. So Steve, how big are your small numbers?
They're literally ones and twos. It's just ones and twos. All right?
That is a relief. I'm very pleased.
Yeah. Now, this relates really well to the title. I want to talk about molecules. Pick any molecule. That molecule will either have one type or two types.
Can I just say,
that
sounds like the beginning of the worst magic trick ever. Pick a molecule, any molecule.
Steve rubs his temples. Was it methane?
This your molecule? And you're like, no, because my molecule comes in two types. And that's the other one.
Take methane, for example. There is only one type of methane. There's just methane. Glucose, on the other hand, there are two types of glucose. Imagine this. Imagine you're trying to make the letter L and you've got four little magnetic cubes. You stack three of them on top of each other to make a little tower. And then you bring the fourth one in and it just snaps onto that bottom one, right? And then you knock it over, it falls onto your desk and you're like, damn, it's a J. I wanted an L. And then you think, oh, wait, hold on a second, I'll flip it over. And there you go, there's your L. Great. But now imagine instead what you're after. You're not after the letter L, you're after the left hand of a mannequin, right? I know that's very different, but just bear with me.
If one of those landed on my desk, I would be like, that is surprising.
But even worse, what lands on your desk is the right hand of a mannequin. And you're like, damn, I wanted the left hand of a mannequin. So you have the same idea. You think, I'll just flip it over. There you go.
No.
But it doesn't work. It's still the right hand of a mannequin. It doesn't become the left hand. And this is true of actual hands as well. You can check this with your hands. Right? Flip over your left hand. It doesn't become a right hand. Right?
I feel like your definition of flip over is insufficiently precise.
Well, please enlighten me.
Well, if you could flip it over in the fourth dimension, you would get...
We're not doing it in the fourth dimension, Matt. It's never...
No. Hey, you make everything about magnets. I make everything about the fourth dimension.
We're on the ones and twos and threes and fourth dimensions
today. Okay, I'm just going to say this once and then it'll be true for the rest of the podcast, okay? Unless I specify the number of dimensions, it's three.
Oh, is that all episodes or just this one?
All episodes.
Oh. Huh.
Unless I'm talking about drawing on paper. Look, just get it from context, okay? I shouldn't have to say it. So, the difference between the letter L that you made out of cubes and the right hand of a mannequin is that one is chiral and the other one isn't. To be more specific, like if you got the little L that you made and put it in front of a mirror and looked at the thing in the mirror, it would be a J, but you could make that J with the actual object itself just by changing the orientation of it. Whereas if you put the mannequin's hand in front of the mirror, you couldn't make the thing in the mirror just by reorienting the actual physical thing that you have. Another name for chirality is handedness. Because of the fact that it's true for hands. So you can talk about this molecule is the left-hand version of the molecule. This molecule is the right-hand version of the molecule. Because it's also true for molecules. You can get molecules that are fundamentally different in the mirror. In other words, a molecule that you can't orient to create the mirror image of itself.
What's that? Okay, so chiral, like this is a whole new word for me. And I have no idea how you even spell it. I'm going to pretend I'm my five-year-old and I'm going to be like, K... Y R Y L. Like, is that it?
Well, I mean, you're talking to me. I'm dyslexic, so let's just say yes. It doesn't matter. It's how you say it that counts. That's
how
what I always.
How do you Google it, Steve? How do you Google it?
It's CH. It starts CH.
CHEIRAL?
Oh, no, what? I'm Googling it and you're all wrong. You're all wrong. CHEIRAL.
What's really interesting is like if you try and make a molecule like sugar in a factory or in the lab, just using chemistry, you know, mixing the raw ingredients together, you tend to end up with a 50-50 mix of the right-handed version and the left-handed version. But the sugar that we find in nature is all the right-handed version.
What?
Isn't that amazing? The reason we call it right-handed instead of left-handed is because of what it does to light, specifically polarized light. If you shine polarized light through a solution of sugar, it will rotate the direction of the polarized light to the right. not to the left.
But only natural occurring sugar. If you had like 50-50 sugar, yeah, sugar, it'll just be all over the place.
Yeah, that's exactly right. That's always something I could never understand. The idea that a solution of sugar would rotate polarized light in a specific direction. Because you think, well, these molecules are all oriented in different directions. Surely any rotation to the left would be cancelled out by rotation to the right. And so a solution of sugar shouldn't be able to rotate light. But it can, because you imagine one molecule will rotate light that passes through it like a little bit. If you want to rotate it the other way, you need the exact mirror image of that molecule, but you don't have it in a solution of sugar because all the sugar that we get comes from nature and it's all right-handed.
So it's like the natural sugar is a right-handed corkscrew.
Exactly.
Like bending the light one way, and to get it to bend the other way, you'd have to have a left spiraling corkscrew. I'm just trying to think of physical things that have a left or right hand.
Yeah, that's a really good way to think about it. Like if you take a corkscrew and turn it upside down, the spiral's still going in the same way.
It's still a right-handed corkscrew, yeah.
Yeah, the only way to flip it would be with a mirror. What's interesting is that for the vast majority of molecules in nature, they only have one of the handednesses. So all sugar in nature is right-handed. All DNA is left-handed. All amino acids are left-handed. With a few exceptions, all chiral molecules that you find in nature are always one way and never the other. And this is called homochirality. And actually, I mean, it's not just nature that's homochiral. Screws, generally speaking, are homochiral, which is useful. If you bought a box of screws and half of them went one way, half of them went the other, that saying, righty-tighty, lefty-loosey, would only be right half the time. It would be really annoying.
That would be arbitrary, depending on which one you picked out.
Yeah. I also discovered that Fusilli pasta is generally homochiral.
Generally?
Like with a very few exceptions. When you go to the supermarket, you might find one obscure brand of Fusilli pasta that goes the other way.
So within a packet, they're all the same chirality.
Yeah. Yeah.
Across multiple packets, they're largely the same chirality.
Yes.
But not completely. Because like some hipster pasta manufacturer. That's right. Like, no, you can go the other way.
I've never found a packet of Fusilli pasta that has a mix inside the packet.
Now, I imagine the pasta probably tastes the same either way.
Yeah.
If we, like, ate left-handed sugar, would it taste the same? Or would that be a different taste?
Oh, that's a good question.
It's a really good question. And it just so happens that left-handed sugar does stimulate sweetness receptors.
Hey.
But it can't be metabolized for the energy content.
Huh?
So left-handed sugar would actually be a really good sweetener.
Yeah, I've just had a patent idea.
People have tried. It's incredibly difficult to make left-handed sugar.
Talk to the pasta folks. They've cracked it.
But is that true for all of these chiral molecules? Because I've heard a thing about some flavors, they're mint if they're left-handed and strawberry if they're right-handed. I don't know. Is that a thing?
Yeah, that's definitely a thing. I mean, you know, well, the question, why is nature homochiral, is a good one. And actually, sugar is probably a good way to explain why you might find nature to be that way. Like, it's about efficiency. You know, if there was a 50-50 mix of the two types of sugar, you would need a 50-50 mix of the enzymes for metabolizing that sugar. And that's inefficient to code for the two types, but it's also inefficient from the point of view of molecules bumping into each other. Half the time, you'll have the wrong sugar bumping into the wrong metabolizing molecule, whatever that is. I don't know the name.
I feel like we just found the edge of your biological knowledge.
Yeah.
Oh, it goes a little bit further, but we're really in the dark now. We're really sort of stumbling around with the lights off. So yeah, it makes sense for the molecular system within an individual organism to all be lined up and agree on doing it one way or the other.
So whatever organism is eating that sugar has the matching enzyme in their digestive system to metabolize that sugar.
Yeah.
That does make sense.
Yeah. But then it also makes sense for all organisms to be the same. You know, if you had a pocket of organisms that do it differently, they don't have the same access to nutrients as the larger population, because most of the sugar that they come across is they can't digest, for example.
Actually, there is one way to digest it. Oh, hang on. Are we still strictly three dimensions?
Strictly three dimensions. But if you want to go to a higher dimension. Yeah. No, if you want to go.
Ignore what I was going to say. Okay. It's not going to work.
One area where it's really important to be able to make the right-handedness of molecule is in medicine. Because it turns out with certain drugs, one-handedness of the molecule does one thing, the other-handedness does something else. A harmless example is ibuprofen. When you manufacture ibuprofen, you get 50% left-handed, 50% right-handed. It's only one that actually does anything useful. The other one's completely useless. So when you take ibuprofen, half of what you're taking doesn't do anything.
Huh.
Because it's cheaper not to filter it out. The process of filtering out one of the enantiomers, as they're called, is expensive.
Just take twice as much, yeah.
Exactly, take twice as much.
That's baked into the pills. I should make that very clear. The pills are the right amount.
Yeah, no, don't take twice as many ibuprofen as it says on the packet. Yeah. They've already worked that out for you.
So we should just clarify that.
Yeah.
And if you're in the fourth dimension, take half as much.
Yeah. In the sixth dimension, oh, I don't know.
In the sixth dimension, you've got bigger problems.
Yeah.
One example I quite like is meth. So the mirror image of meth is a decongestant nasal spray.
Oh, my goodness.
So in the manufacturing of it, like, how do you separate the two? So you've made a whole load of decongestant nasal spray, but half of it is meth. What do you do? Basically, wow. You have to fall back on nature. So you have to find an enzyme in nature that binds to the thing that you don't want, and then you chop out the bit of DNA that codes for that, you put it inside a bacteria, you breed the bacteria, then you get the enzymes out, and then you use that to latch onto the thing you don't want, so you're left with the thing that you do want. It's a very expensive process, but it can be worth it for really effective drugs where the mirror image is dangerous.
Sorry, so you're manufacturing a bacteria that eats meth and leaves behind nasal decongestant.
That's right.
Loves its job.
What all this means is, if you went through some portal and ended up in a mirror version of the universe...
I know how that could happen. But it's not allowed.
Matt's just realised he's supposed to have been taking notes for this whole thing, because this stuff could be useful to him after all.
You could just... pop through the fourth dimension. Carry on.
I'd like to know the details, but basically, yeah. So if you ended up in a mirror universe, you couldn't digest any sugars. There'd be issues with proteins. Any way that your body interacts with chiral molecules in nature would be screwed, and you'd end up getting sick. But how? You can't just say the fourth dimension, Matt, and suddenly we're in a mirror universe.
No, but if you were in a mirror universe, then you could just go and get some nasal spray. Or at least have a great time.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Well, we've done the ones and twos. What's left?
Yeah, that's a really good point. More ones and twos. I wanted to share something with you and with our listeners, which is actually a work in progress. It's something I started during lockdown. I started writing a mini musical based on a children's book in order to try and keep myself sane and to keep my daughter homeschooled at the same time. It's very multi-purpose, you could say, two-part project. That's where the twos come from. No, it's literally all about the ones and twos because it's a mini musical based on a book called Hello Numbers by some people that I think, Matt, you know at least one of them.
It's got two authors, but I only know one.
It has got two authors, but you only know one of them. I mean,
one of the twos. Yeah.
We're so on brand. It's unbelievable.
It's just more numbers.
But it's got an illustrator as well, which makes it three. Ruins Whoa. Everything. So it's by Edmund Harris, who's a mathematician. Houston Hughes, who's a writer and a musician, and illustrated by Brian Ray. And it is a counting book for children. I love it. My daughter loves it. So far, my son enjoys chewing it, which is a good start. So, you know, there's potential there. And one of the reasons I love it is that I think, although it's a counting book, it has the potential to become a miniature musical with a plot and a storyline and characters, right? Because there is this big, strong streak of educational philosophy within what is essentially a children's book.
You say mini musical.
Yeah.
What percentage of a musical? Like, what is it? Just, it's really quiet. It's got fewer characters. It's over in 10 minutes. Yeah, like, what makes it mini?
How many dimensions is it in?
It's a work in progress, so it could be any and all of these.
Oh, all of those. Right.
As yet. So in this multi-dimensional mini musical, I'm going to put it straight out there, it's going to involve several dimensions. The thing I like about this book is that it's a counting book, but it's not just about counting for the sake of counting, right? I have a lot of counting books. My children have a lot of counting books, but this isn't one where it's all about just learning the words, you know, 1, 2, 3, 4 in the right order, like a memory game, like a song, like an opportunity to have nice pictures of different quantities. There's a bit more to it than that. For starters, Matt, and this is why I know you'll like it, it starts with zero.
There you go. Perfectly good number.
It's so rare to have a book that starts with zero and tries to build on the fundamentals of what numbers mean, not just what they look like when you draw different quantities, right? So it only covers the first few numbers, up to about 6, I think, but it kind of plays with those numbers as well. So as you're reading the book, you start making connections between things that these numbers can actually do, not just how they sound as words and what quantities they represent. So with number one, it investigates how you can move around in space. And if you're just one, you can move in any direction. You can move up and down and left and right. But it also addresses the fact that that is completely meaningless if you don't have another one to measure the relative distances, yeah, or the context.
That's
or
deep.
One without another basically doesn't mean anything. You can go anywhere in space, but also you are anywhere in space if you have no context. So that's quite a mind-blowing concept for page 3 of this book.
I assume the pages start at zero as well.
Yeah, but you know what? I haven't checked that. And if it doesn't, I think they need to reprint.
Page 3, the fourth page.
And maths is about not just what the numbers sound like and what the quantities are, but what you can do with them. So every page of this book has something that happens with these numbers. You start on number 2, and it's about drawing a line between two points. It's about symmetry. It's about mirror reflections. I mean, ooh. Steve, we should have had a quick look at this book before you started on chirality, because I'm pretty sure there would have been some context to enjoy there. And it starts having fun with all the things that you can do with two, like you can go around something, you can go over something, you can go under something, and then you start on 3, and there's triangles and angles, and 4 is quadrilaterals and different shapes you can make. It's never just about counting, even though it's kind of a counting book. And it starts going to stuff like division and number bonds and remainders and things that you don't start getting to until you're in reception class at school, like primary school, at junior school. You don't start learning about this stuff, but it's all in there. And the numbers themselves are adorable. They're these little coloured blobs with faces. And there's something important about them all being the same kind of object rather than being different things for each number. Like you get other county books and you get one pineapple. And then on the next page, you've got two pears. And then you've got three satsumas. And that feels like a different principle from one leads on to two leads on to three of the same conceptual object or type of thing or thought or element, right? Mm.
I mean, that's the basis of mathematics, that you can abstract counting away from
objects. It's definitely not arbitrary. I've talked to Edmund about this, and it's not arbitrary that they all look the same. It's a definite choice because it is trying to get across these fundamental relationships between counting and quantities and shapes and objects in space and creating this really firm foundation before you start doing the next stage of mathematics. So far, working on this project, I've got approximately 200,000 pages of notes and research and five songs. I've recorded two of them just for this podcast. I've done kind of nice demo versions with me singing all the parts. Guess which songs they are from the full range of infinite numbers available.
The ones and twos.
Yes!
I mean, you're on brand.
I'm so on brand. There is plenty of detail about one and two in these songs. And with any luck, you're going to be singing them for the rest of time because I've tried to make them as catchy as heck as well. And if anyone is listening and wants to turn this into some kind of mini album or animated YouTube series or family musical at the Edinburgh Fringe, like, I don't know what this could be, but any of those things.
Or the West End.
Yeah, okay. I'm not sure if the West End is ready for number theory. If anyone would like to join me in helping create something out of this, then I'll be over here trying to find 15 new rhymes for zero, because that song isn't finished yet.
How many times can you use the O from Surprise? What are you drinking? A beer. Oh.
Yeah, that definitely a lot of potential in that one.
What's that running around your backyard? A steer. Oh. I mean, this. The format.
It's endless.
It's very flexible.
US actress Millie Shapiro. Okay, fine. I just started Googling at one point rhymes for zero. If anyone wants to help me out, please do. I think we should just play the songs and everyone can enjoy a song called One and a song called Two and see if you all enjoy some number theory in musical form.
One is a person or a place or a thing. One head on your shoulders, one note that you sing. You could use the word it, but there's another way. When you're counting, one's what you say.
Tell where one is from, where one has
There you go. That was me, literally on the ones and twos. Thank you for listening.
Now, Helen, as always, I hate to be Captain Counting Things, but earlier on, you said you were going to sing two songs, and yeah, that was only one song, which is a smaller number of songs than two songs.
Well, yeah, but aside from that, it also seems like you got a lot better at playing the drums than I remember.
Yeah, okay, like, fine. Okay, like a lot of things over the last couple of years, recording the final version of that second song, which was about the number two, it got cancelled due to COVID.
It's tough for everyone. Tough for everyone.
Yeah, but so I kind of focused on just getting one of the songs finished properly, and I had to recruit some help to do that. I asked one of my musical theatre writing partners, the brilliant composer and arranger James Hughes, to give me a hand, and he did all of the instrumental stuff, all of the instruments you hear played on that track. That's all him, and he's the one who's turned it from this little demo into an adorable little song about the number one that I would not have been capable of doing myself. We are still working on song number two, but I have no idea when we'll get it done, I'll be honest.
Well, that's fine. It's to be continued. So.
Well, get out.
That's funny because our two is a homonym. Anyway, if we're talking about successful collaborations, I feel like now is a very good time to mention that we are part of the Acast Creator Network.
Yeah, so natural.
Thank you.
If you want even more details and justifications, check out everything we added to the show notes. It's linked down there in the podcast description. We've even worked out what Matt meant when he kept saying Lagrange constant. It's
so close.
Well, it took a while. And we're still not sure we got it right, but it's there in the show notes.
Anyway, we'd love it if you could rate and review us on iTunes, if you have a moment in your life for that. It does make a big difference to how many people get to hear about this podcast and how many episodes we'll get to make in the future.
And if you have any more unnecessary detail for us or just want to get in touch about anything you've heard, our email is podcast@festivalofthespokennerd.com. And we're on all the social medias. So come find us and say hi.
Bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.
A podcast of unnecessary detail is made by Festival of the Spoken Nerd. That's Helen Arney, Steve Mould and Matt Parker. Our series producer is Lindsay Fenner. This episode was produced by John Harvey and edited by Clarissa Maycock. Our theme music is by Howard Carter, and we're proud to be part of the Acast Creator Network. Thanks for listening.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.